Welcome to Side by Side, a podcast where I, Robert Kwong, take you inside conversations with artists, creatives, healers, and warriors taking the charge in their transformational story. Today's guest is business and leadership coach Paul Silva, who draws on both his work with culinary students and those in addiction recovery to help clients get out of the sidelines of their lives. In our conversation, Paul unpacks his relationship to spirit and sobriety and how they empower his authenticity and full self-expression. Thank you, Paul, for agreeing to speak with me. And I shared with you a little bit earlier that I had seen your work mostly through your social media presence, I think on Instagram and things like that. And I think you popped up on my TikTok and you've been quite active there. And to start off, thank you for agreeing to speak with me. It's a pleasure to speak with someone else in like this line of work. So thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. It's, you know, for me, it's always an energetic, you know, thing for me. And so it's like when you reached out for some, the first thing was yes. Like it just, it felt like correct, you know. And there's some people that will ask, and I just feel like there's a mismatch energetically, and I'll just politely decline. But yeah, you know, for you, it was just like, no, I gotta say yes to this guy. There's something about him as well that just really resonated with me. So it was a no-brainer. So thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. And I just have to say right off the bat, you know, in the era of authenticity, I really do appreciate your social media presence because you kind of take the people, like the way you post content on social media, it has that, like, I'm going to take everyone kind of on this journey of self-discovery, and anything that you encounter that spark something in you or some kind of lesson or insight, you kind of like are more than happy to share it with your audience in a very organic way, to me at least. Where does that come from? Some people really struggle with that, especially in, you know, modern day where things are kind of tense online, but you really strike that chord of like, no, this is who I am. And so this is what I'm going to show.
Yeah. Thank you for noticing that. It is, I was talking to someone about this just the other day, because one of the things that people do say to me is like, I appreciate your authenticity and your openness. And part of me is like, well, it doesn't feel like that to me. I'm just sharing.
Yeah.
And that comes from, when I got sober, you know, doing the inner work. Up until then, I had not really done any inner work. And as I started to dive in, and it was scary, one of the things I learned was to share where I'm at. Because before, I would never share that. I would go hide off and be the lone wolf. And that didn't work out for me. Mm-hmm. And so going to meetings and opening up, I learned that there's a difference between sharing just to vent and just to kind of blah and have other people clean it up, as opposed to what I do now, which is share and kind of be vulnerable and just maybe things aren't going well, or this is my journey, and then kind of flip it and make it about them. So I take a struggle that I have, share openly about it, but then turn it around saying, this is something that you might be struggling. This is something that I'm doing that you may want to apply. Mm-hmm. And so it's always incorporating the viewer or the listener or the reader, wherever it is, the medium I'm using, for them to feel like, oh, this applies to me. Or maybe even it doesn't. At least there's still that connection that I'm hoping to create. It's not a tactic. It's not something I strategize over. It's just something, that's how I've always been.
Right.
And that's how I've always shared. And that's how I've always connected. And it comes very natural to me. But you're right. There's a lot of people that they really struggle with that. And that's okay, because they have their own ways of connecting, or they're starting to discover things about themselves along the way. We're all on the journey. And we're all along the path, right?
Yeah. So was it more difficult to feel or be authentic prior to sobriety? Because you said it was right around then that you started looking inward. What was life like leading up to that moment?
Yeah, there was no openness, whether it was because of bullying or whatever it was that I felt I had put up walls and protect myself.
Right.
And what I learned, through primarily through bullying, but I learned that to be myself meant pain. So drinking was a way of kind of washing the me off of me, of trying to remove myself, to separate myself from myself. But you can't. It's just, you can't. So that's the reality. And so I did everything I could to step away from myself. So the last thing I could do, the last thing I would do is share anything about myself, because there was still that scared boy who flinched and was waiting for the blows to come his way. So it was really almost dissociating from my true self through drink, right? Like I was seeking spirit, but the wrong kind of spirit. It wasn't until, I didn't get sober until I was 40, Robert, 40. And until then, it was just, everything was a charade, but it was falling apart. And it just got to a point where I was like, I can't do this anymore.
So do you also, I kind of hear a little bit in you talking about your journey that getting sober for you and also starting what some might call like your spiritual journey or your spiritual awareness, doing inner work, that it coincided. So I'm curious, as you started on this journey to get sober, what was helpful for you in terms of either spirit or even just community or anything that was helpful to go through that journey of actually getting to know yourself and learning how to show up as yourself?
Yeah, community was huge. And again, coming from a place of being a lone wolf, that was scary. I didn't want to open up to anyone because I just saw danger everywhere.
Yeah.
And as I started to slowly let one person and then another and then another, and obviously with the recovery community, I felt safe in that way. And it still felt a bit insular, but at least there were others I can talk to, others I can share, others I can listen to and commiserate. And just so, and as that recovery phase started to open up, the spirituality part started to just bud open a little bit, just slightly. And it wasn't until a couple of years later that really started to open up, but there was always that thread. There was always that thread. It was very interesting. When I'd be in my drinking days, sometimes I had to take a break. Like there was a point where my body hit its limit in terms of just, it couldn't do it. So there'd be times I would take like a couple days off of drinking. And for some strange reason, I was drawn to books about religion or books about spirituality. Like, but I didn't understand why I was drawn to that. I had no idea. I wasn't religious, nothing. Books about God, books about the universe. And I was like, what am I reading?
Were you raised religious?
I went to Catholic school.
Okay.
But my parents were not religious. We didn't go to church on Sundays or anything, but I feel like they just wanted me to be in a Catholic system.
Gotcha.
And so I don't have anything, I don't have any attachments or resentments or issues around religion. But what came to me later, much later, was, again, I was seeking something that was outside of myself. Even though I was learning about myself, I'm also learning that there's a connection between us here in, in this body, this vessel, and something greater than ourselves. And it was just really pulling the threads together on this. And it took me some time to really connect all those dots. But even early on, even in the throes of my addiction, I knew there was something beyond what I could see in the mirror.
How does that feed or impact where you are now and the work that you're doing, as a coach, as a mentor, just like a community member? How do they feed into kind of the place that you are now and the work you do?
Great question. I'd asked myself that many times.
Yeah, right.
I knew that there was something that, because I feel like there's a reason for a lot of these things. And there's a reason why all of these different paths, it feels like they're converging. And in my work, working with people, that's energy, right? Even though it could be very tactile results, it's energy. You're working with people's energy. And so the more I understand about myself and the more grounded I become and the more understanding and open and empathetic and humble, as I continue to grow these things and learn and expand, I find that helps me relate more to people. It helps me recognize maybe what they don't see because I could see that in myself. And, you know, without making assumptions, we explore that. But I get a sense of people very quickly. Like we just talked about, like you and I, like as soon as I was like, boom, he's it. And so I think it's just all about energy and just connection. And all of these lessons that I've been having and continuing to have really do weave into my work because as a service provider, I am my business. Like I am, like when people want to work with me, they want to work with me. Yes, I have skills and I have certain things, but in the end, it's the person, right? There's a tons of coaches out there, but every single person that's worked with me at some point has said, Paul, I love working with you because it's you. Right. And I think we all have that ability to connect. It's just our energy. And so where we are with ourselves, that's getting transmitted, whether we think it is or not, it's unconscious. And people pick up, it's like a radio wave, an antenna. We pick up on everyone's energy. And so the question is, where are you with your energy?
And spiritual practice or being connected to spirit is one way that you could connect with your energy and also find ways of grounding your energy. It's kind of what I hear a little bit. Is that correct?
Precisely, at least for me. And the spiritual practices that I have worked with and or continue to work with, I don't do a lot of the practices per se. I think I've integrated a lot of things. It is about that grounding. When I'm off, when I feel off, when my habits shift or when I see my perception shifts, I know that starts with me. There's something in me that is not connected. And that's that same, I recognize that same disconnection I had when I was drinking, right? And so I can pick it up. Like it has a certain flavor to it. And I know it's like, okay, I'm disconnecting. Where do I need to reconnect? Like where's the sore spot here? And really kind of looking within. And that's the beauty of doing the inner work is you get to see and recognize more your inner landscape and how it's shifting and maybe where you might be straying in an area that normally you're more connected and grounded to.
It's something I would say as a coach and working with clients, it's something I've noticed, and that is something where you rely on your gut instinct, if people call it that, or intuition, what have you, is that noticing when people start to disconnect and versus when they're really in it and they're really alive when they're talking about something they're working on or that they want. And then the moments like when you've gone through the struggle, you notice when someone starts to disconnect even from themselves. And I've found doing the inner work for me and understanding myself a little bit, it's easier to be with others and notice those moments and those important inflection points in working with someone in particular. What are some things that you feel like people often struggle or they have a tendency to want to disconnect as far as it could be issues or just like things that have come up in your client work where you notice people struggle to stay with it and want to start disconnecting?
Well, I love that question. There's a lot of disconnection I feel. And again, we see through filters. And so I see my biggest struggle has been self-love and self-acceptance and self-forgiveness. So I'll tend to see through that lens. But I do see people, a lot of clients who feel disconnected from their true, authentic higher self, whatever you want to call it. Best self, future self, higher self, inner knowing self. There's a disconnection. So they tend to go more on the left brain side of things and try to justify and rationalize and quantify and put on a spreadsheet and try to make it sense when there's this other side that is like I call intuition like a whisper at a rock concert. And if you're not used to tuning into that frequency, that voice, it gets shouted down by fear, by worry, by doubt, by what will others think? What will I think? What if I fail? What if I succeed? All these thoughts. So it keeps them small and it keeps them from growing. So Because the lesson for me is always move into intuition, move into quiet, move into stillness, move into mindfulness, move into asking questions, move into and get that knowledge and wisdom there. And people fear that. They fear maybe like, because people know, like intuitively people know when they're off the path, but they'll continually draw their energy away from there and stay on a path that is like way that they're, you know, quote unquote, supposed to do things.
Mm-hmm.
And so I see the disconnect greatly from who their true, authentic higher selves are. And you can see it. You can see it in people's habits. You can see it in the way that they comport themselves. You can see it in the relationships they choose. You can see it in the jobs that they take. You can see it in the foods and other substances they take or abuse, or you can see it in, there's so many ways that it shows up in a very tangible form.
Mm-hmm.
And the more that, and that's where I help them, even though, I mean, it's all self-leadership. It doesn't matter what kind of coaching I've done. And I've switched niches and areas many times. In the end, it comes down to self. How true are you being to yourself? Because the more you stand in that space, the better the decisions you make and the greater the results shift. Until then, if not, you're playing dress up.
Yeah, I love that. I love that last point. And, you know, I notice you talk about some people really like to stay with, well, I'm going to process this in the most logical, rational, cold, hard facts way possible. Or sometimes I've also seen people where they're like, I can only be emotional about something. It's very like left extreme or right extreme in some ways. And I hear you talking about, no, let's look at what are the signs? What do you notice from either of those perspectives, or maybe both at the same time? What does that look like? I'm curious, as a guy, has that ever been challenged by the outside world that as a guy, you can also draw information from emotional intelligence as well as be that sort of typical rational, goal-minded, material-minded guy that they don't have to clash? I mean, has that been like a journey for you, or you're always sort of like, I allow myself to express emotionally as much as rational and it just came naturally?
Oh yes. You know, another part of my journey has always been as well, Robert, is exploring masculinity and what it means to me and what it means in general. It's been a huge part of my journey as well. And I, you know, in my social and all that, I do talk about men's studies, if you will, or men's issues at times, because it's very personal to me, because that also helped me grow as a man, you know, with this predominantly masculine energy. We all have masculine feminine, you know that. I mean, we all,
yeah,
regardless, it's,
yeah,
we all have that. And we can come either from the divine masculine feminine, or we can come from the wounded divine or wounded masculine feminine, and we all come from that at different points and all that. But what I had learned, you know, in just the last few years, is it was very safe for me to be in the feminine, very safe, you know, to be in that space. And I denied a lot of my masculine energy because I saw it as harmful. Because it was harmful. I had been harmed with like more of that wounded masculine energy,
right.
And so, you know, I was in a men's group for a year and I really struggled. It was five calls a week. It was Monday to Friday, every single day for an hour.
Oh, wow.
For a whole year. It was a year long container. It was challenging. I didn't want to be there a lot of times. I struggled. I, you know, struggled in plain sight, as they say.
Mm-hmm.
But it really helped me. And then I worked with a men's coach after. And what came out is that I didn't trust my own masculinity. And I've had to really step into that and to step in to be a leader. You know, I've read many books. I facilitate a men's group right now. I do all these kind of things because I think it's so important. Men, and I don't want to go too far off course with this, but, you know, men, for many men, they struggle because they only see two options. Either they stand in the feminine energy too much, or they think they have to be an asshole. Like there hasn't been a lot of healthy masculinity modeled for us, at least not for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so I didn't know where to go. And there's a lot of wounded men right now, a lot of wounded men who don't even know that they're carrying this. And so for myself, it's been a wonderful and painful lesson in learning how to balance both energies and knowing when to assert one over the other, when to push forward, when to hold back, when to give, when to receive, when to take action, when to sit in stillness, when to nurture, when to protect. And all of these traits that we all get intermingled. But as men, I mean, frankly, 95% of my clients are women, because they recognize that I have that feminine energy, so it feels kind of safe. But they also want the push, and they've said this is not me conjecturing, mm-hmm. they want more of the masculine. They need help to actually do things, to get things in action, to stop just dreaming and not executing anything.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very wounded feminine or you know, whatever. So it's very interesting. It's a great question, because for men especially, you know, there's not a lot of men in the spiritual space, generally speaking, at least I found.
Yeah.
And so we've had to kind of assimilate heavily into the feminine. And we hear about the goddess energy and the divine feminine, which is wonderful. But I think for men, what gets lost in that is the divine masculine and the power that there is there.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's in the end, for me, it's being a model. In modeling this, I have two teenage boys, so I'm modeling this for them as well. And seeing that you can be strong, but you can also be accepting and loving. You can fight for what you want and guard and protect, but also nurture. And it can be a tough balance. It can be a tough one to balance out.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the word balance is something I've been playing with for a long time. And some people find it to be like kind of almost like it's kind of not possible, but maybe striving for it is an ideal in some ways. But yeah, it's really struck a chord with me doing masculine feminine work, because we spend so much time being at odds about it in ways that I find fascinating. And one thing I'll say, and you talking about the kind of there being divinity in all of us, but also we can behave in toxic ways. For sure, we've all seen a society where people, an individual, can choose toxic, generally perceived masculine or feminine behaviors from a place of being wounded, or from a place where they actually genuinely, this is authentically how my being is and how I show up, versus I am really hurt and I need to take it out in some way.
Yeah.
And society has all these different ways of us being able to sabotage and make all sorts of assumptions. So in talking to you about some of your life's journey, this is kind of what I've been thinking about. It is really tough. I mean, so what are some things that you wish we could cultivate more that to you is kind of more of a healthier way to approach the masculine energy, or to embody that in some way? Like, when might it be of value, and how do we stay in that rather than going back to being kind of from that wounded place?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest lessons I learned, Robert, was for me to learn to express some of that healthy masculinity is to be surrounded with healthy masculine men who are also on their journeys to open up. So that's why the importance of being with other men, you know, I'm on social media a lot. And what I found is that there's a lot of women telling men what a man is. But they're coming at it from their place and what they're looking for in a partner, et cetera. It's clear. And it's very all contradictory. It's all over the place.
Right. No one agrees. Yeah.
No one agrees on what a man, like, they want a man to open up. But when they do, a lot of women can't handle that. And so what happens is you'll see men open up. And then in the end, they're the ones consoling their partners because she was triggered or whatever it was. Like, there's a lot of imbalance. And that's where coming from a wounded feminine or whatever it is. But I think for men, and what helped me was being around other men and learning from them and leaning on them, going to them first rather than going to, let's say, like a female friend or my wife or my mother or whoever, you know, and bouncing ideas off of other men, because it comes with a different energy, right? There's a great book called No More Mr. Nice Guy by Robert Glover, and that's the book that any men I work with, like, it's almost required reading. And it's showing the difference between a nice guy and a good man.
Mm.
And there's a huge difference. right? Nice guys, there's a lot of anger, there's a lot of red flags, there's a lot going on with, and I can identify so much with the nice guy syndrome. But it is that shift into a good man, and that means for me asserting myself more, taking up space that I've been given and allowing myself to take up that space. Being able to say no, being able to be the protector of my family. Or I remember, our car got stolen twice actually. And I put up cameras and I did all sorts of stuff. And my wife said, "Thank you for protecting us." And it felt like, oh, okay. And but I didn't realize like she saw that as protecting and doing this and doing that. And so it's also trusting our intuition a little bit more. Again, going back to our highest selves and trusting that there is power, and there is power in anger. There's power in guarding people and guarding. It's really like for me, as they say, like if you didn't have that modeled, assertiveness can seem like aggression. And so I went from meek to aggression. I didn't understand that there was assertiveness. And you can state, you can have boundaries, and you can say no, and you can be that, and people will respect you still, right? They may not agree with you. And so it's been, I'm 52. I'm still learning this. Like I'm still stepping into that space. It's getting easier and easier. And it's easy for me to, like, I can catch myself recoiling into the feminine when there's fear around, as opposed to going into the divine feminine when it's needed. And so it is a balancing act. It's
Okay.
so hard.
Yeah, but no, thank you for distinguishing that. You know, going kind of as an instinct, going into some sort of feminine behavior when you're in survival mode versus, oh, I'm choosing to stand in like the feminine power or choosing to stand in compassion, which some people decide to be a feminine trait, you know, and if that's how you see, then great, I'm standing in the feminine in that moment. But yeah, thank you for sharing that. It's so I hear a little bit of what you shared that, you know, similar to women and others, men cannot simply rely on outside voices telling us who we are, but actually just being in community so that we give ourselves a chance to connect and discover and to feel into who we are, rather than just relying on the outside world constantly trying to mold us into someone that they believe we should be, which, as you point out, no one agrees on who we should be as men, right? So it's interesting you point out, it's like, well, interesting, we all want that, but then we don't have a we don't we can't agree on what that even is. And I think it's important to look at that with a bit of irony, you know, rather than have it drive us bananas or something.
Yeah, precisely. It's and the this thing of authenticity, just it's so hammered into me now how important it is. It's no one, like, again, this is age for me. This is also just all that I've looked at and studied and went through, have gone through, is authenticity connects. People know when you're being genuine. People know that that's who you are. Of course, there's a level of self-containment we contain. There's some things that I keep here because it's private.
Sure. Yeah.
But I can be myself, warts and all, and be okay with it. That's the thing. I think that's what discerns how I am and where people, there might be a gap for people, is I'm okay being transparent. I'm okay telling on myself. I'm okay opening up and saying, yeah, look at this, look at these scars. And being okay with it because I'm okay with it. And so to me, that shows healing. I think if there's shame
Yeah.
in there, that there's it's a wound, not a scar.
Right.
And there's a difference when you come from a wound and you come from a scar. And the wound obviously is still healing and they're very raw. And it's very sensitive to the touch. But when you come from a scar, it's there's been healing. And I think it's important to model that healing and to show that it's okay to have scars. It's okay to have the war wounds.
Yeah.
That's what builds us up. That's what bolsters us. That's what gives us more of an impetus to share and help others. I mean, you and I, we're in a service where we want to help others, and that's what we do. And we use our experiences as a springboard.
Yeah, it's so funny you talk about authenticity, but also you do honor there are some things that's for you, because it's like you said, the, is it a wound or a scar? And you know, my intention when I work with someone is not to just demonstrate that I can get wounded and just show them all of the wounds, but also to say, hey, we all have scars, but here's how you can make a commitment to living life to the fullest with these scars, rather than just like, hey, I'm wounded. This is what everyone gets to see. Because you're right, we do need to respect boundaries and everything. So, before I kind of leave you with some general questions about intuition that might be kind of fun, I'm a little bit curious about your previous life in the culinary world, because it's just so prevalent in our everyday life. And I'm very fascinated by that whole world, because it has its own distinct energy signature. It's very intense. And I'm curious, given your experience, what's something you think about with food, farming, and nutrition, given your particular background? You know, because this is an issue that nobody can avoid. We all deal with the act of consuming and dealing with farming and all of it, right? And you've been a part of that world. So I'm curious. I wanted to throw this question at you.
Yeah, the chefing. I was a chef for 25 years. It was a lot of fun, and that was before there was the cult of personality of the celebrity chef. And we were just a bunch of bridge trolls living in the back of that. And it was for the fun and for the passion. As I started to move up and started to get into more positions of power, like in terms of what I could control in the environment.
Yeah,
A lot
authority.
of that
Yeah.
did, yeah. A lot of that then it did come to, because part of being a chef is also sourcing products. You could go for the cheap, trucked in from Mexico grapes or whatever it is, or you can try to find something a bit more local. Now, depending on the time of year, et cetera, it's a balancing act. But one thing that definitely started to come around when I was in the industry was this farm to table movement, the slow food movement,
Yeah.
all of this. And what you found is now chefs and restaurants and food organizations and places were starting to really tap into the local scene
Yeah.
and creating relationships with farmers and purveyors, and whether it's honey or musk ox, or it was certain fruits or vegetables, if it was dairy. It was cultivating those relationships so that it was a win-win. They get the support, the financial support, and you get to work with these wonderful ingredients, and the customer gets to try these wonderful things that they won't see at their local, shop and save. And it was a great education, and then then it can get into like food security, which is a whole different area. You look at like here in Toronto, it's and at, as of this, you and I talking, I mean, grocery, like the cost of groceries is just off the chart right now. It's insane how much. I just read today, eggs are going up again.
Yeah, same here.
And it's, we have food banks here. What you're seeing is this explosion of people using it. Dual income families, like quote unquote middle class. There's lineups around the block. That's unheard of until like even 2 years ago. And so there's this food security, and it's like you see this gap growing between being able to have groceries on a regular basis and people who are. And so as someone who works with food, and part of what I stepped into being a chef is because I loved, like that's like a love language for me. Even now, when I show, part of me showing affection to my family and all that is cooking for them or cooking for others. Like I enjoy it. Most of the time, sometimes it's like, leave me alone. Just heat something up from the free the fris freezer. But I'm always grateful because I see this growing gap, and knowing that I'm grateful that I can have this. But there is a connection between, going back to your question, with farmers and land and purveyors, and it's like indie artists, right? It's working with them rather than going to the big conglomerates. It's finding these little hidden gems and treasures and exposing them and helping them out, and you learning something. And I've learned so much from farmers, from growers, from vendors, and I've been able to pass that on to others. And so they can educate, they can get educated on what's better for them. Nutritionally, it's huge, right? I don't know enough about, and I don't get too much into like the chemicals here and this, and like obviously there's a lot of stuff, a lot of preservatives, and obviously the fewer the ingredients, the better, and pesticides. But they can be cost prohibitive, right? It's like back in the day, McDonald's, I don't know if they still, the salads cost more than
Burgers, yeah.
those, the quote unquote burgers. And so of course, people who are struggling, who are or struggling with poverty, they're gonna eat the stuff that's actually less healthy for them.
Yeah.
And so it's a cycle. And so there's connections between poverty levels and nutrition. It's unfortunate.
Yeah, it must be so interesting getting to really observe that, because I noticed, with all of our previous lives and all of our different like junctures in our life, right? One thing I notice with people who start doing the inner work is just you start to see how all these different things affect each other and how they're all connected. So you can't almost can't help but start looking back at the worlds I've been in. Previously I wanted to be a writer, which would have meant very coastal. Maybe I would have moved to LA. There was a certain life that was going to be set up in that way. And then you start interrogating all these spaces that you occupy, right? And what is going on there? And the food industry is another place that just has, it's because it's so vital, there's just a constant discussion and discourse about it. So thank you for kind of talking about the highs and lows and like on the ground, real everyday life needs. And then also some of the world of like the culinary arts and stuff. It's really fascinating. I'm curious now, as when you work with clients and stuff, what are some ways that they can engage with you, and what are some things that you like to focus on with your work if they wanted to reach out to you?
It's so interesting. And I don't know, I'd be curious to volley this back to you in a second.
Yeah.
When someone comes to me to say, I want to work with you on X. And then before you know it, you are everywhere but X. Right? Or it starts off there. And then, of course, it has its own little dipsy doodle path and it goes where it needs to go. So I've had lots of people reach out for me, like entrepreneurs. New entrepreneurs or people who are hitting a ceiling in their business work with me, and before you know it, we're working on like a 20-year resentment they had towards their dad. Because business problems are personal problems in disguise, right? And how you do one thing is how you do all things, and so it's all interconnected. And so how you show up in your business is a reflection of where you are with yourself. And so even though we may start off with some surface issues, what we find is really quickly when we start to go inward is that they have a lot more control over things than they think they do. Because I can't control the external, but because the external is a reflection of the internal, I can change the internal. Hence, I can change the external. And so it's them recognizing that. And then we can get to work on what is it that is most, what's the biggest gap right now? In their let's say their business. What's the biggest gap in leading their family? What's the biggest gap in how they are at their place of work and they're leading a team? Maybe no one's respecting you. Maybe no one is listening to you. Maybe people are walking all over you. Maybe people are afraid of you. Maybe your boss, maybe you feel like you're going to get fired any moment. Or maybe you're an entrepreneur and you just feel, I'm lost, and should I just go back to a job? And this is much harder. And how come I can't, create clients or customers? Whatever it is, all these externals, and then you start to dive in. So those are a lot of the things that people have come to me with. To be honest, there are still people that come to me for. I used to work with addiction recovery. I used to do
Yeah, people
work
in recovery,
transition,
sure.
yeah, and just like general life coaching, quote unquote. But really what I've learned is that it all comes down to self-leadership, and that's really what I focus on, is self-leadership. Because if you can't lead yourself through habits, through understanding yourself a little bit more, creating new ways of doing things, creating new inner scripts and self-talk, it's going to be hard for you to lead externally. And I think that's the culmination of all the lessons that I've learned until now. And that's why I'm excited. That's why I talk about it so much, because it's still my journey. And I've learned a lot. And things have changed for me because of making those changes. Everything from the masculinity part to the spiritual part to like all of that. It all converges. And it's so important for people if they want to change, because you have to want it, that it comes down to that. So that's the kind of work I do. So on the external, it seems like business and entrepreneurship and all that, but it eventually it does go a little inward.
Oh, yeah. Doesn't it always?
I'm sure you know.
Yeah, right before you know it. Thank you, Paul. So I noticed I was trying to think of a interesting final question. And, you know, just because I've seen your social media, I kind of noticed that you have this spontaneity about you. Like if you capture some kind of something, you get a download, you really can express it in a way that still resonates and connects. So
yeah.
What's been something you've noticed recently that's been kind of a magical moment for you? Like it could be anything.
Magical moment. Ooh. I can tell you're a great coach. You got great questions. magical moment. Well, you're right about the in the moment stuff. That's why I can't plan my content ahead of time. That's why I can't batch create.
Yeah.
Because once the energy of that, whatever it is I need to share, once it's gone, it's gone. And so if I start recording something and I wait till the next day to post it, 95% of the time I won't post it because I'm not in that moment anymore. I'm not in that energy anymore. And so I feel like it's like just being a conduit, just like a translator, right? Like, you know, you get that energy from source and then you got to boom, it's got to go out as opposed to here's three things that you can do to, you know, that's fine. Educational content is great. But when you get that inspired action, it's important you take the action as soon as possible. The magic moment, you know, I would say for me, it's when I hit that moment, when it comes in so clearly and like, for me, that would look like a one and done doing a video, like where I just get it all out in one shot.
Yeah. Yeah.
It feels aligned. It's done. When I struggle, when I'm having to take 20 takes and I have 37, you know, clips on my camera phone.
Oh yeah. Been there. Yeah.
Yeah. Then, you know, it's like, you know, sometimes I just stop. I'm like, this is not happening anymore, but I'm not doing it. I got to edit this, forget it. But it's those little clear, quiet, crisp, flowing moments. And it just comes out in such a way that you go, where did that even come from? Like it's almost channeled. And to me, those just feel great. And those are the ones that people resonate with the most. Because again, it's all energy.
Yeah, but you're so right. We are so accustomed to, again, boxing ourselves in. Like you get a thought like that and people, like oftentimes if you don't catch it in that moment, you're for sure going to forget it. It's like trying to remember your dream after so long. You're not going to be able to. And so someone who kind of understands that is able to sort of capitalize off of that moment. It's just kind of great to see, especially as someone who has been pretty like very overly planned with like anything I put online lately. I saw that as a little bit of a challenge to myself of like, boy, I have these moments, but I don't ever have the courage to actually like capture them and just see what happens. So maybe this is a little sign for me to step into more authenticity in that way, alongside all of the other planned and scheduled stuff, of course.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
There's nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong with having certain things planned, like especially if you have a launch and all that kind of stuff. Sure. There's nothing wrong with that. But it's always lovely to create space for the spontaneity. And I think that's the one that tends to connect most.
No, it is, because I, you know, it's important to me, but truthfully, you know, planning out the content, I don't always feel like they're seeing like the most authentic side, as much as like I'm just trying to be clear with what I'm doing. I'm clear with the intentions. It's educational. It's not really about my emotionality necessarily, but with authenticity, of course it is. So anyway, thank you for showing your authenticity to the world. And it was a pleasure talking with you today, Paul. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Robert. This was fantastic. And it was a pleasure. And thank you for creating this space where it just feels cozy and lovely and being able to just share without having to filter anything. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I'm so glad that you didn't experience it as a work call.
Oh, my goodness.
Thank you for tuning in. Listeners are welcome to connect with me over Instagram and LinkedIn. You just have to search my name, and I love to hear from you. If you'd like to learn more about my work as a coach and artist, please visit www.robertkwanghome.com.